we had an electrical fire in the new header. It started a stubble fire in our barley and then went over to our wheat. And 840 acres of wheat was lost, and we saved the header. Our fire was very narrow where it started from the header, and it just got a little bit wider, and it just went across in a straight line across the paddock. It wasn't very wide, but it went for so long and burnt a lot of country. But if the wind had have changed and got onto a front, it would have been horrendous.
This was in late October. Can you describe the day?
Very windy, southwesterly winds blowing pretty strong, and it took hold pretty quick.
Have you had fires on your place before?
Yes, we have, yes.
Was there any inclination maybe not to harvest that day because of those conditions?
No, there wasn't, no.
All right, Rowan, your fire was about a week later.
We were harvesting an exceptionally good crop of barley with a huge stubble left behind, and something started a fire in the paddock, and we lost about, fortunately, from all the help from our neighbours and the fireys, we only lost about 20 hectares of crop and no machinery. We were very, very lucky, but it was a very gusty, hot wind that we had. The biggest fire I've ever been close to in my life.
How was it looking when you saw it?
Well, because it was a 500 a hectare barley crop, there was an enormous fuel load there for it to get it into. But when it got to the timber area, the riparian areas around the river, was when it really got some height about it and laid all night. It was frightening enough.
Have you had fires before?
About a week before we had our first one.
Geez, I'm glad you can smile about it. What's the experience of going, oh no, not again?
Well, it wasn't good. The first one was a very minor affair. A header got a fire in it in doing chickpeas, which is not unusual, and we got it out quite easily. This was on a different scale altogether. It was pretty frightening, really. Yeah.
Why was it frightening?
We did have our own firefighting equipment in the paddock, which we used straight away, and we got so close to controlling the fire it wasn't funny, but eventually it just took off, and because of the type of day, it was a massive fire.
In these neck of the woods, it's all hands on deck with neighbours left, right and centre. Cole, you came to fight these both fires?
No, I was only at Rowan's fire, and it was just I was just driving across the road, and I noticed a bit of smoke in the paddock, and I went for a bit of a sticky beak, and when I actually got to the fire, as Rowan said, it was pretty well under control, and there was a fire that had been put out, and they were working on another fire, but it was you understand now the ferocity of a fire as to how quickly it took hold. It turned from a small fire into a very big fire. As Rowan said, he only lost a small amount of crop, but there was about 450 acres of country altogether that went to fire, and you don't often go to somewhere and fight a fire in a pair of slip-on shoes, but that's all I had because I wasn't expecting to go to a fire. I was just going visiting, and it was intimidating. It really was intimidating. I was standing out with the wind behind me, and this little fire just turned to two massive fires that came across and formed a front. It just took off.
What did it smell like?
I was behind the fire, so that was really good. It wasn't until we started to fight the fire. You know, there was an enormous amount of fire engines turned up, but also local people came. You know, there's people come from 30 k's to fight the fire, and once you got into the fire, it just took your breath away. It was black and dirty and smelly and just, but you know, we just had to have a crack at it, and the people that came and had a crack at it did an amazing job.
Rowan, how bad could it have gotten?
Well, we certainly could have lost mother bins, which were loaded and therefore impossible to shift. We could have lost quite a lot of machinery, and it was a fire of sort of such intensity that if you were in its path, there was no way to get away from it. It would kill you. Yeah. No, I think we were extremely fortunate. We're very grateful for the efforts of the fireys and our neighbours for rallying the way they did.
Greg, you've had a couple of fires now on your place. Have you learnt any lessons that have made you implement changes?
No, just having firefighting equipment on scene, and we've put our chemical tanks on the fronts of our tractors, hooked fire hoses into the hypro pumps, and run them as well. It's been quite handy at times and get onto them pretty quick.
What's the theory behind the chemical tanks on those tractors?
Well, they're on the front and they're doing nothing while we're harvesting, so we fill them with water and hook fire hoses to the back through the hypro pump, and it's very handy to have.
It's obviously very hot and dry this time of year. It's been an early harvest because of the conditions. Has there been any talk that this is a worse year than ever for fires, or worse than normal?
No, worse than normal. I just think it's like low humidity and dry, and I just think it's just what's happened, and maybe next year might be a different thing again. Who knows?
It's not uncommon to get a fire during harvest. I mean, it's very, very common, especially particular crops that are prone to ignite a bit more than others. But whereas we've had two major fires in this small area, you know, next year or last year, it was somewhere else that's had a bigger fire where, you know, it's sort of got out. And this fire was out of control, and it took a lot of, you know, once it hit the old Mihai and got in amongst the old trees and that sort of stuff, and then it was down, and there was a possibility, if it didn't, to get across the Gwydir, it got into an area where it could have been a lot worse. So it happens everywhere. Like, a lot of people have these issues, and it's just the nature of the beast. And it was a beast on the day.
In Victoria, they tend not to harvest on dry, hot, windy days. Is there any consideration at all to maybe follow the Victorians?
No, we've got to get our crops off here for the rain, weather damaged. Yeah, hopefully they don't ever bring that in, because it'd be a horrible experience to try and get your crop off.
Are there any implications for insurance when you are harvesting and you get a fire? Are there conditions that you must have met to ensure that payment?
Well, we've had contractors here who won't harvest chickpeas, who tell you they can't harvest chickpeas without firefighting equipment in the paddock, because that would void their insurance. And going back to the Victorian thing, I have relations who farm in Victoria, and they quite happily stop when conditions are bad for fires. But because it very seldom rains in Victoria in the summertime, they have the luxury of being able to knock off on Saturday afternoons and go and play cricket, which is something we never do because of the high risk of thunderstorms and crop downgrading because of that. So I think we've got to keep on harvesting whenever we can.
Rowan, the fire went from your barley to the riparian zone and even across that river. Describe what it was like to fight fire in those big gums.
It's nearly impossible, particularly when they catch a light. Fortunately, our neighbours on the north side kept ringing me saying, will we come and help you, but we think we should stay here in case the fire jumps the river, which it did, and they saved the neighbours on the north side by using a lot of common sense and staying where they were. It is very difficult to fight a fire once it gets into a gum forest, yeah.
I'd say, I reckon that a lot of the fires around here are used to grass fires. Like, we don't have a bushfire as such. It's normally just a grass fire, so they're used to fighting grass fires or the odd house fire. So I suppose when it's in the stubble, it's probably looked upon just as being a grass fire. When it got into those gum trees down there, to see it in those gum trees, you can't put those fires out. I mean, it was intense, and all night from my house, I could look out of my bedroom window and I could just see this glow, and it was like chimneys of fire all night long. And when it gets into those trees, it's just, you can contain it and stop it from going anywhere, but you can't stop the trees from burning. You can actually hear them roaring as the fire gets in there. So, yeah.
Were you concerned, or any of you concerned, for your personal safety?
Well, you asked who took control.
You were a bit worried about your toes.
I was worried that I was going to damage my slippers, that's for sure. I've had them for years. But when we first got there, we were fighting it with sticks, leaves, you know, because we thought we could contain it. But, you know, we just had all these little parties of people fighting fires, and everybody just seemed to know what they were going to do. And some of those people are trained, and most of us weren't. I think it was just, it's got to be done, you know, we're going this way. And, you know, water control, we had people at the tanks making sure we could get water, and being able to access water was a bit of a problem for some of the fire trucks. But everybody, it's just like instinct.
Greg, you've had a few fires, been through a few, and you've also helped neighbours and people in the community. Where does your training come from?
Just experience from previous fires, I suppose. We've had several out there, and of course the distances the Rural Fire Service has to come, we've been generally the first on the scene.
Does it take a mental toll?
No. Well, it hasn't for me, but I imagine it probably could for some people.
Rowan,
I think on a mental note, look, I didn't lose a crop. For someone who loses a crop or their machinery or their fences, it's got to play on your mind. Like, it's a loss, and no one can afford to take a loss. You know, quite often when there's major catastrophes and people lose so much, that there's always some sort of support for those people, be it, you know, if there's a major fire that takes out houses and sheds and all that sort of stuff. But when there's a fire out here, Yes, you can have insurance, but that insurance doesn't cater for the loss of, say, Greg had or Rowan had on the day. So it's got to play on your mind. These people don't grow crops for fun. It's their livelihood. It's how they make their living. You know, they don't go to the office at 8 o'clock in the morning and come home at 5. They start work and they work for 16 and 18 hours or more a day and night in horrible conditions. You know, it's not air-conditioned. So it's got to play on their mind. And it's got to be emotional, you know. It's stress on the family, stress on the finances, stress on the place, you know. So these blokes probably don't realise that because they do it all the time and they've done it for years, but it's genuinely stressful in every way for people who suffer fires like that.
Rowan, your crop fire was a pretty good one, mainly because your barley crop was so good. How does it feel to lose that crop?
Yeah, well, it's our son's crop, really. He's farming that country now, but... it's not a good feeling. I agree with what Cole just said. I don't think I've ever enjoyed a run more than when I finally got home and sat on the veranda looking at this glow and sort of thought, well, that's lucky. You know, that's bad. That was a bad day, but it was a very lucky day. I'd consider ourselves lucky given all the circumstances rather than unlucky. But
next year, will there be any benefits to this fire?
Well, there could be. One of the more cynical neighbours of ours said that... One advantage would be we wouldn't have any crown rot in future crops of wheat for probably a decade. It was such a hot fire. So I guess you've got to find something positive.
Greg, have you noticed a difference in those paddocks that have been affected by fire on your place?
No, I haven't, no. Maybe some crown rot issues and stuff like that. But, we have done burning over, like planned burnings over the years, and all that sort of died out. Now the minimum tills come in, so it's created other problems, so... But no, we're just really pleased that all our neighbours could come and help us with ours. And we're just lucky that nobody got hurt.
Is it luck or is it good planning?
probably a bit of both.
What's the biggest lesson to come out of the fires this year for you?
Just go having firefighting equipment ready to go. It's what you've got to do. And
and it's all hooked up as well, not
it's
just...
It's all hooked up. We have a milk tanker, ex-milk tanker, and it's 10,000 litres and it was there and... another 3,000 litre, plus our chemical tanks on the fronts of our tractors on the chaser bins. They're either driving to the header or away from it or back to it or whatever. It's quite handy to have.
Rowan Pearce, your best lesson.
I think it's a bit like eternal vigilance. We have always had at least, we've got a tractor, like Greg described. It's a row crop tractor, so it's got a chemical tank on the front, and we have that full of water. We've got a trailer mounted... smaller firefighter, and you know, the lesson to be learnt was if it's not hooked onto a ute, those couple of seconds it takes to hook it onto a ute are the couple of seconds you actually, when it was your biggest chance to get on top of the fire. So I think having a ready-to-go firefighting equipment in the paddock is probably the thing that we always have had that policy, but it'll certainly be enforced very strictly from now on.
Cole, will you now have a decent pair of shoes in the ute at all times?
Don't leave the house without your boots. But yeah, next time I go visiting, I'm going to wear my boots. I mean, those black slippers are never going to be the same.
Any other lessons you've learnt from these fires?
You know what I reckon? If there's one thing about it, it was just the effort that people put in. You know, when you're blasting through the... It's funny. After we'd fought the fire and I was driving the ute and Oscar Pearce was... on the trailer on the back, and there were three young fellas, and I need to mention these three young blokes. They're 18 years old, and one of them is a neighbour, and he was with us. And he rang his two mates, who one comes from up the other side of Bingra, one from Walgett, and they were in Moree. And those two 18-year-olds came out to help, and they were there, and they fought the fire, and they were filthy, and they were dirty. They could have been at the pub, they could have been doing anything, but they came and helped with the fire, which is... I just think the fact that people were there to help, nobody was asked to help. People just help and they see what's going on. And, you know, that's the thing. It's a beauty living in the bush. And, you know, you're always there to give your friends a hand in some way. And
Rowan, your wife's put a lot of effort into maintaining the riparian zone. She likes her trees and her animals. I believe she put herself on the line.
She did, apparently. She stood between a fire engine and a tree that she happened to know was... occupied by echidnas, and I think they had to push her away to try and get at the fire. But, you know, she has certain priorities. And
Your crop wasn't one of them.
Rowan's not one of her priorities. What are you talking about?
So how are those echidnas, do you know?
Anyway, they haven't been sighted, but I think if they would have dug fast enough, they may have survived.
One of the things about the fire, and people may not realise, is the amount of wildlife around here. We live on the river and we're really lucky, and there's a corridor and we get lots of koala, echidnas and wallabies and all that sort of stuff, and that's probably the greatest loss. You know, there would have been a loss of lives of koalas and that sort of stuff there because they're there. You know, I get a lot of koalas on my own place and they follow the river along, and I'm not a tree hugger. I just love wildlife, you know, and, you know, they're the losses that you can't get back, so...
It'll be interesting to see how that riparian zone, that riverfront, recovers.
Yeah, well, it probably will recover very quickly, being an Australian landscape. It's used to that sort of thing. The lesson, I guess, Kate's learned as a conservationist is that cool winter burns around those massive trees are probably the way to protect them from a very hot burn like they got the other day. And the RFS had to send out an excavator to knock burning trees down because they would have kept on lighting fires for weeks to come.
Did that in winter, put a few burns in?
Yeah, fortunately... Because we had a large pig problem this winter, we had a dozer in and pushed up a lot of box thorns, which are the curse of the riverbanks around here, and they were lit during the winter when they did no harm at all to the wildlife of the trees, and those areas were pretty well protected from this stubble fire. So there's a lesson there to sort of do some burning during the winter when it does very little harm to anything.
What about you, Greg? Is there any back burning you can do on your place?
No, not on our place. We're all farming, and it just, it just started in the middle of a big paddock and kept going.
How long did it take to fight that fire?
Well, they were there most of the night and the next day and for a few days afterwards, but it only took about, you know, half an hour to burn 800-odd acres of standing wheat.